You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Greetings, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the unofficial, officially on purpose, Halloween special of the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about the fourth serial of the 18th season of Doctor Who, State of Decay, which consists of four episodes that aired from November 22nd, 1980 to December 13th, 1980.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Steve Conway for getting us these episodes.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
You can check him out.
Feels weird.
No, it's so weird to not say Matt.
It's weird to not say Matt. It's mostly weird because my dad's name is Steve.
Oh. You can check him out on 8radio.com. And he was an actual radio pirate, he did pirate radio, which is pretty cool.
It's neat.
You can hear all about that in the last episode.
Or watch, one of the documentaries about him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Also that.
Joining us today to talk about State of Decay, I did not mean to rhyme, but I did. It's returning guest Nicole Mazza. Welcome back.
Hey, guys. Woo! I'm back.
How have you been?
I have been well, thank you. I've been watching a lot of Hammer horror movies this month, so this fits in perfectly with that. So
nice.
This was completely unintentional.
Yeah, that it was a Halloween episode.
Yeah, this episode goes up the day before Halloween, which is not on purpose, but hey, it worked out.
Spooky!
Because if you don't know, this episode's got vampires in it.
Yeah, I had a list of Halloween recommendations for on my podcast for Doctor Who Stories for Halloween, and this is always on the list. It's perfect for that. I mean, it's vampires. I mean, space vampires, but vampires.
And it was a holdover from the Hinchcliffe era.
Which I forgot how scary that was.
Yeah, because they had the Frankenstein episode, they had the Mummy episode.
Just things would happen in this episode and I would just go, for kids! For kids!
Yeah, it was actually originally written for the Fourth Doctor and Leela, which would have been a very interesting dynamic, but apparently at the time there was a Louis Jourdan Count Dracula TV miniseries. Well, sometimes it aired as a series and sometimes it aired all at once, but that was 1977, I believe. And so they were like, oh, we can't have two vampire things on BBC at the same time. So they like shelved it. I'm like, oh, come on. We could totally do that. But it was fine. That is a great series, by the way. The Louis Jourdan one. Very good.
I wonder if that's why this is such a good serial for Romana.
Maybe. But also, at least, I mean, it's sad that they didn't make it then, but at least that led to Horror of Fang Rock, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. And we also, Lala Ward was in a Hammer horror film. She was in Vampire Circus as a vampire. So she's got some vampire cred.
Did she juggle in it?
No, she was like an acrobat. She was, there were these twin vampires. They were acrobats in the Vampire Circus. And it was her. She was Helga. And her brother was Heinrich. It was pretty cool.
Did anyone juggle in it?
It's been a minute since I've seen it, but it is on my watch list this week, so I can get back to you on that.
I just need to know the quality of this circus.
I'm just going to say yes, and maybe, if you watch it, you don't see it. Maybe it was a deleted scene on your particular version.
Any circus worth its weight has jugglers.
Oh, right? Yeah. I mean, totally. I mean, that goes without saying.
Speaking of, how's my juggling coming?
Yeah.
Aww.
I'm teaching, well, I'm sort of just watching Tony learn how to juggle.
Yeah, you're really more just judging than you are doing any teaching. I attempt to juggle and you just go,
No,
see,
not
you're
like
doing
that.
It wrong.
I tell you what you're doing wrong. I just, it's hard, I have a hard time telling you what to do right.
Yeah.
I just say, just do it.
Which is kind of the crucial part of teaching. Like, have you just tried...
Well, part of the problem is that you want to jump straight to just juggling. And you have to, like, build up to it.
That's boring.
And you do one ball, then you do two balls, then you do... three.
I just want to do it.
It's like guitar lessons. You know, just because somebody can play doesn't mean they can teach. Maybe it's just one of those things.
I have been getting better. I want to be able to juggle and skate at the same time. Like, that's what I want out of life.
That's a really lofty goal there, but I think that's amazing.
Right, like, anytime I could show up and do it at places, it would be great.
Together, though, you can skate and I can juggle.
Right.
But I can't skate and you can't juggle, so it's like...
And I'm no better at teaching you how to skate than you are teaching me how to juggle. I tried really hard. I've taught skating lessons.
I'm not a very good learner.
Not a good learner or a teacher.
Well, you could be just a double act, and maybe before a derby bout, you could go out and one of you can juggle and one of you can skate around.
If I'm going to skate at a derby bout for entertainment, I need a lot more practice. Be like, look, that was a plow stop, huh? We all very impressed by that? No? Okay, because it took me a very long time to learn.
We should probably talk about that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I look forward to your titles. They're always interesting.
These are probably not very good. Let's find out.
All right.
Episode 1, which I have called Technocothica.
I like it.
Yeah, that was a great word. Yeah.
Means absolutely nothing, by the way.
Yeah, I Googled it immediately.
Yeah, I watched the commentary, and Terrence Dix was just like, I'm pretty sure he made that up. That was not in the script. Also, a quick fact about this script. It was written by Terrence Dick, the late, great Terrence Dick.
Just and, the one?
Oh, yeah, Dix. Sorry.
Did he lose one?
Well, now he has, but... I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
But yes, Dix, plural, I guess, wrote the script originally for the Hinchcliffe era, and then they picked it up for this season. Christopher...
Bidmead, yeah.
Picked it up, and he rewrote the whole... They got the director attached. This is his first serial, the director who did this.
Peter Moffat.
No relation to Stephen, but he agreed to do it, and then Christopher H. Bidmead rewrote the whole script, and then Peter Moffat read it and went, what is this? I don't want to do this. And like said, I won't do it unless you bring back the script that Terrence Dix wrote. So they did.
Whoa, really?
Really.
I'd love to read the other script.
I mean, I think Bidmead still did fine-tune some things, but it wasn't the drastic overhaul he originally did. So apparently he got rid of all of the gothicness that was present in it. The one thing I know for sure that he did add is the idea that the castle is the ship. That was not a Terrence Dix idea.
Always a solid idea.
And that's actually the first thing we see is the castle that looks like a spaceship. That's what I said when I saw it. I was like, that looks like a spaceship. Who knew?
It's supposed to be modeled on Mont-Saint-Michel, but it definitely looks a little more rough around the edges than that.
I mean, I guess castles in general sort of look like spaceships anyway.
Yeah, maybe they all are.
Ooh, maybe. So inside this castle, we meet the three who rule, as they are referred to.
They are great.
There's a king, a queen, and a counselor.
The king and the queen do this weird thing where they move in sync.
Yes, that's like my favorite part.
It's very good.
Yeah, I wonder how long they worked on that to kind of like block that out and make sure that they moved, because they're not always looking at each other when they're doing it, so it's perfect.
And it's just like the right of like the first couple times they do it, you're like, what was that? Like, it's just off-putting, and you're not exactly sure why. And then like the third time they do it, you're like, oh, they're just, okay, why?
It's like a dance, you know? They just sort of, like, move like a dance. And poor Alcarn, he's just, like, kind of left out. He doesn't move with them at all.
No, not invited.
Like, they're the king and queen, but he seems like the one who's actually in charge.
Yes.
His name's
Alcarn. But his makeup isn't as good.
It's all right.
Like, it's fine.
He doesn't have that, like, ridiculous beard.
He seems, like, a bit faded compared to the king and queen. Like, they look like they've done theirs up more recently. And his, maybe he went to sleep with his makeup on or something. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, he's looking like he might need a refresh.
Right, right.
They all they're all very pale, obviously, because they're vampires. And they have red makeup on around their eyes.
Which needs to be cosplayed more. I don't think I've ever seen anyone cosplay them.
My immediate thought was like, ooh, that's bout makeup.
Yeah.
The king and the queen, their names are Zargo and Camilla. Zargo's beard is got like little curly cues at the end of it. It's so great.
There's a couple good bits of hair in there. There was, oh God, I'm blanking on his name, but I will remember it when I get there. But the old guy that's a scientist and he has all the braids. He has all the braids going over his head.
Kelmar.
I kind of just assumed he put, like, he found a mop and he put it on his head and was like, this is what a wig is. I've read about them.
It's his really bad comb over.
I've read about them in the archives.
Yeah, he just, like, braided it.
Though he's not the only one with, a thing around his head. Because Ivo also has one. Ivo is the sort of leader of the village.
Oh, okay.
But his doesn't look like a mop. He just has, like, a band around his
head. This looks nice.
Kelmar looks like he was trying to be Bo Derek, you know, and it just failed. Like, he didn't have enough hair. That was a problematic hairstyle for her.
I got that reference.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. That was really dated, wasn't it? I was about as old as this episode, I think.
What is it? 10? Is that
10,
what it's called?
Yeah, which I think was around 1980. I can't remember now, but yeah.
I'll show Tiny real quick what Bo Derek looks like in 10.
Okay. Oh, that's cute.
Dudley Moore, Bo Derek, Julie Andrews, Blake Edwards movies. Same guy who did the Pink Panther.
Yeah, everybody tried to copy that haircut or hairstyle at the time, which was, of course, you know, a little racially problematic, but no one thought of it that way at the time, you know?
She's got the same hairstyle as the, what are they, the Movellans? Was that what they're
called? Oh, yeah, yeah. The disco guys. I always like them.
So it's time for selection, and we meet Ivo, who's getting everyone together to be chosen out of... He gets a group of, like, the best to be chosen for selection, and he gets his son to sort of hide around a corner.
Rude. You're picking all these other people.
But when the people come to make the selection, they see him around the corner and go, that kid.
Also, like, they're picking out their best, but everybody looks rough.
Yeah, they don't know how to treat their cattle.
Yikes!
It's not like Carl was hidden, either. I mean, he's just sitting over on the table. Like, he's not, like, he's just right there. It's like, oh, that guy over there. No, I want him. Plus, they all know each other. He's gonna know he's got that son.
Yeah, because it's a whole thing about later that someone says... When the doctor shows up, they're like, who are you? We know everybody. How do we not know who you are? It's a very small group of people. So, yeah, the doctor and Romana are still trapped in E-Space. They're trying to find a planet or anything, and they finally do. And K-9 scans and finds it and says that it is habitable. And also, it has there's signs of high technology. And then when they land there, the doctor scopes it out with his telescope and is like, eh. Looks like a medieval village.
It's all medieval and shit.
And then Romana's like, but what about the technology? And he's like, yeah.
He says, computers are wrong all the time. Talking about canine.
But she's like, shh.
Oh, speaking of their dynamic here, something that was revealed in the commentary, and then when I was watching it, it's 100% true. Apparently, during filming, Tom Baker and Lala Ward had a bit of an argument and were not on great terms. And if you watch the first... episode and a half, Tom Baker will not look at Lala Ward.
What?
Wow.
Really?
That's really close to when they got married, too, so I would think it would be different energy, but you're right, yeah.
He's either, like, looking forward, or he's kind of looking through her, and then it's, like, an episode...
That's so pity, like, petty when you have a job to do, though. Like,
I mean, he still does the lines, I guess. In episode two, though, they made up. And then, like, towards the end of episode two, you can see that he's just, like, looking at her and very close to her, and they got over it.
Whoa.
But for an episode and a half, yeah, he does not look at her. Like, that entire scene where they're, like, sitting on the throne, he's just facing straight forward the whole time.
Wow.
I didn't notice it while watching it. I only noticed it once it was pointed out to me by the director, so.
I couldn't even imagine, like, just having to deal with that.
And it was his first Doctor Who serial, too.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, when he says it's like it looks like a medieval village, he goes into the TARDIS and repeats the exact same dialogue to K-9. Like, word for word. He's like, that was a good line. I'm going to use it again. And he convinces K-9 to stay behind because nobody likes riding for K-9, apparently.
Oh.
But everyone's much nicer to K-9 in this serial than they have been.
Not the director. The director hated K-9.
Oh.
That was in the commentary as well. He's like, he's got no, he doesn't, you just film him and he doesn't do anything. Like, right. It's a very boring shot.
But he gets to sit on a throne at the end. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
It was so cute. To when it happened, it cut to it, Joe just kept going, who put him up there? Someone had to have put him up there. Who did it?
He gives orders, so he must have ordered one of the guards or one of the people, the rebellion people, to put him up there. Like,
yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's a great shot.
But it's great. I don't know if that's the director being like, can we do anything to make this shot interesting, please? He clearly succeeded. If he was struggling, congrats. You did a great job.
So while the doctor is talking to K-9, telling him to stay behind and research stuff or whatever, someone else is on the TARDIS who overhears this conversation. And I legitimately was like, oh, right. I completely forgot about Atrick.
Same.
I think a lot of people try to.
I still don't have a problem with him yet.
He is kind of an ass at the end of the serial.
A little bit.
But then he's like, oh, it was a plan all along for me to be an ass, but it wasn't a very good one, so.
Yeah, K-9 calls him an immature humanoid, which I liked.
There is also a bit where he does say, what's in it for me? Which is a very rude thing to say.
I will say, as a very small spoiler, and it's not like going to mess up your watching, but I think he is better with the Fourth Doctor than with the Fifth Doctor. With the Fifth Doctor, it's, I don't think the dynamic is as good, personally. That's just my opinion, though.
I heard, like, sort of like he has kind of a father-son dynamic going on, and then that kind of gets messed up because Five's so much younger.
And then he's like, I'm smarter than all the girls and, you know, all this stuff. Tegan and Nyssa and stuff. And it's like, oh, no, you're not. Shut up.
I do know a big spoiler about him, which is,
He dies,
yeah. And apparently everyone was happy about it. It was like a real, like, Robin in the Batman comics sort of deal.
I didn't know this. One of the first episodes I ever watched was the one where he died, and I was like, oh, that's so sad. And then I, like, found out, and I didn't watch more episodes, I just found, like, read, like, responses to him as a character, and everyone was like, I'm glad he died. And I was like, what the fuck?
I mean, I wasn't glad he died. He just wasn't one of my favorites.
You shouldn't see what people say about Dodo.
Oh, poor Dodo.
Oh, I'll fight them. It is weird to be, like, it almost feels like stuck in an era that you know, or, like, stuck with a character that you know isn't people's favorites, and you're like, what if I hate it too? He's gonna be around for a while.
Well, you could be like, I'm gonna be rebellious, and I'm gonna like him.
I've done it before. That's how I feel about Edge of Destruction.
I love Edge of Destruction.
I was gonna say, I thought when I first started liking Edge of Destruction, I think like one person was like, that's controversial. But no one I've talked to has disagreed with me, so maybe it's not as controversial as I thought.
Do you like the web planet somewhat, right?
No.
I thought you liked the bugs, though.
Like, I like the Optera. I like parts of the web planet really, like, a lot. I think I think
every serial has something to like.
Yeah.
The Doctor and Romana leave the TARDIS. They bump into a scared villager who runs away. I'm not entirely certain why. I guess because he's like, who are these people? I should know everyone. But he literally does the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil before running off. I didn't notice that the first time I watched it.
Yeah, they all do that. It's supposed to be a reference to that. But yeah, I didn't notice that until I was reading about the story. And I was like, oh yeah, that is what they're doing.
It's very natural the way they go about it. So, and then they go into town. And again, people are very weirded out about the fact that they don't know who these people are. And one of them just assumes that they're royalty.
Because they haven't got shit all over them.
You look like you've showered recently. You must be lords.
This is when they say that they're like, well, what do the lords do? And they say that they protect them from the wasting.
Which is not...
Yeah, what is the wasting?
Well, they never say, because they even ask, what is the wasting? And they're like, the wasting.
The wasting is... The wasting.
The quest is the quest.
Which actually Terrence Stick said he didn't like. That was going to be one of the titles of the episode. And he said he was worried that there would be jokes about it being like the wasting of people's time.
Yeah, because his original title was The Vampire Mutation, and Bidmi was like, that spoils it, the reveal, so they decided on State of Decay. But yeah, The Wasting was a potential title in between the two there.
Then we sort of get our first hint of more advanced technology when Ivo uses a walkie-talkie.
To talk to someone we don't know, but we will later find out is Kelmar and his group of rebels.
Yeah, they just have a bunch of computers in a cave.
With, I don't know where the power source is, but, you know, we'll go with it.
They have a generator.
Oh, that's right. They do mention that. Because they mentioned they find this stuff and they find food and all kind of stuff there. Which, 1,000-year-old food, I don't know, but okay.
It's all Twinkies.
It's future food where they've got hella preservatives.
Ah, yes. That makes sense.
It's all that, like, dehydrated prepper shit.
Yeah. They don't know they have to add water, so they're like, this tastes really hard and stale.
I love these future food flakes.
What is steak?
And then we get a scene that I think is adorable. And again, this is me. I like this scene with Adric. First off, the director asks a question, or maybe it's Terrence Dix, or maybe it's even Adric himself. Adric was also in the commentary. But he's like, why do I have a patch on my knee? That's weird. And it's because he hurt his knee in the last serial, and they cut his pants open to work on his knee.
Oh, right.
So there's some, like, costume continuity here.
I didn't think about that. You're right.
And I was like, if only I could be there to answer your question in the commentary. K-9 says, like, what are you doing here? And calls him, like, he says, like, he's not supposed to be there. He's just, and Adric says he's a stowaway. And then, like,
explains what a stowaway is to K-9.
And then he's like, well, I'm going to go follow the doctor. And K-9's like, you can't, but I, and then, like, Adric's like, well, you said I'm not supposed to be on here anyway, so I'm just, wouldn't it be best if I leave? And K-9's like, yes? And Adric, like, heads out and he goes, gotcha.
What a punk.
I outsmarted a robot dog. Meanwhile, Doctor and Romana bump into a bunch of people in hoods who take them to a cave that is filled with technology, like we mentioned before. And this is where the Doctor says, he says, you've got quite a technocothica here. And,
which is nothing.
Yeah, and even, like, Romana's like, what is a technocothica? And the Doctor's like, I don't know, I think it's some type of museum. And basically they say that they found all this tech and that they want to revolt against the leaders and they're trying to, like, get everything together to do that, but it's taking time. Also, the three who rule are informed that they've arrived. He tells them that he thought they were royalty, and they're like, how dare you? We're the only royalty. And he's like, I'll send my guards to go find them. And then Akon's like, actually, no, I'm gonna send my bats. And then we see, like, a stock video of a bat flying superimposed over his face.
Also, why is, like, later we'll hear the bats as they're following them around. Why is it computer generated?
I kept thinking they're, like, robo bats or something, but yeah, you're right.
They're space bats.
Space bats.
Yes. I don't know, the BBC's got that stock footage just lying around, like.
Yeah, and I mean, it's weird that they have bats there anyway. I mean, maybe they came with the great vampire. I'm not really sure, because it's just this random planet. Why were they a bats?
That's definitely part of, like, vampire powers. I think you can just generate bats.
A bat. They did say they had a generator.
Right.
That's true.
A bat generator.
A bat generator. In the bat cave.
So I heard Adam West has a bat generator.
Yeah.
So then we get a scene of Adric sneaking around trying to steal some food.
Again, a punk.
Which is just what he does, I guess.
Is completely fail to steal food?
Yeah, right now that's, like, his defining personality trait.
Is he tries to steal food and immediately gets caught.
Yes.
River fruit and whatever this soup is.
It looks good. There's a scene where they're kind of cutting back and forth between the, like, peasants eating soup and, like, the royalty eating, like, their fancy food. And I'm like, that soup looks good and I want some. I do not care about what the king and queen are eating. It does not look good.
It was just a plate of salami.
It was just Just a plate of salami.
And they also had cheese on their table, and the peasants were like, what's cheese? So maybe, like, I don't know, maybe the Three Who Rule keep cheese a secret from the peasants.
No, yeah, that is too... That is a luxury item, cheese is.
Yeah. Well, richer fare would only distress them, as Camilla says.
You don't want a peasant with indigestion.
No.
And that's what the doctor says. But after Adric tries to steal this food and fails, the woman who stops him is Ivo's wife, Marta. And, like, both Marta and Ivo are basically like, guess you're my son now.
Yeah.
We could use a replacement.
Ours got taken, so you're our new kid.
Yeah, we barely have enough food to feed everybody, but we're going to add another person. I mean, I guess they've lost Carl, so they can just...
They give him, like, his jacket.
Yeah, here's our dead son's jacket.
This is some, like, real bad stuff happening right here. They have 100% replaced their son with this stranger.
Yeah.
That is a weird, weird way they're coping.
Well, I'm sure there's no therapist for the peasants.
So, back in the techno cave, we learn more about, like, they are not allowed to learn things. The penalty for knowledge is death. And that's why they don't know anything about technology and blah, blah, blah. But these people have sort of snuck away to learn things. But they don't know how to turn on this one monitor. And Romana's like, it looks like Earth tech. And then the doctor's like, well, Earth engineers used to do this. And then he just smacks it and it turns on. Which I thought was hilarious. it looks like very old 80s tech.
I was like, that doesn't look very advanced.
It's got, like, the, you know, the text readout. It's all green. And it's a ship log for a spaceship called the Hydrax. And we see pictures of the three crew people. And they look exactly like the Three Who Rule.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Three Who Rule would be a good title. That's my title.
Good title. The Doctor and Romana are like, well, we're going to go talk to the Three Who Rule then. And they leave and are attacked by bats.
Bat attack.
So many bats.
So many stock footage. Electronic bats.
Also, bats on strings. They also get attacked by bats on strings.
Them too, yes.
And that is the cliffhanger, it's too many bats.
Oh no. I think what's great about it too is, like, there are a couple shots with, like, bats on strings, but that's not, like, the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is just, like, they look up and point to the sky, and then it's a shot of, like, way too many bats. But they're not, like, being attacked by them. It's just like, look over there! Oh man, that's too many bats!
Yeah, that's definitely the stock footage. It's just like, look, stock footage of bats!
No! Just pointing to a projected screen. But that is the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I have called consonantal... That's not how you pronounce that word. Consonantal shift.
What are you trying to say?
Consonantal shift? Consonantal...
He's talking about the shift of the consonants.
Yes.
I got you.
It's a title I can't even say. I can say Technocothica with no problem. It's not even a real word. One of the guards shows up and says, the Three Who Rule want you, and then they take them to the castle. Okay, so there's this whole plot where Akon sends the bats to go get them, to find them. They don't know where they are, so they go to find them. But the Doctor and Romana were headed there anyway. So this is just, now they just have an escort.
Yeah, it's like, here, let's show you how to get there. I mean, I guess you would see it anyway. It's the only... building.
I think it's in the general direction of the giant ass castle.
Right.
But they are taken to the castle, which the Doctor notes that there are no windows, which is our first clue, I guess, because spaceships don't have windows.
Nor Jehovah Witnesses, right?
Is that a thing?
I think Jehovah Witnesses are the ones that don't have windows in their religious buildings.
They're all Macs.
Max, Jehovah Witnesses, and the Three Who Rule.
So this is where we meet, where the Doctor and Romana meet Zargo and Camilla, and they offer them some salami.
Just a plate of plain salami.
A salami sandwich.
You know, like, I totally, you know, I'm on a low-carb diet. That's usually dinner for me, is like salami and cheese and stuff, so I'm with them on that. But the soup did look good, so.
And they also have some, I guess, wine. They toast.
I don't drink
wine.
I never drink wine.
So they do a toast, and Romana is very clumsy.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird scene, too. I mean, the way she breaks her wine glass.
It's like, we need it. It's vampires. How do we drop a hint that it's vampires We need somebody to cut themselves. Okay, so they're going to toast, and the doctor just toasts Romana too hard and cuts her finger on the glass. That's a thing that happens, right? Yeah, write it down.
Yeah, I mean, because it breaks her glass, so maybe they just... Oh, maybe the vampire, the three who rule, have, like, a glass that's breakable.
Oh.
Like, specifically for that. And it's, like, candy glass or whatever, and they... But then she wouldn't cut herself, so...
Well, it's future glass.
Future glass. Future,
very fragile glass.
And then Camilla's like, let me get some of that. I mean, let me help you.
Hey, let me kiss it and make it better with my teeth.
It gets very erotic for, like, 30 seconds, but...
not long enough.
Romana's like, I'm fine. Don't worry. I don't suck on my finger.
Get
weirdo.
That out of your mouth.
And meanwhile, Akon has went into the village and decided he's going to do another selection. And the person he picks is Adric, because he reads his mind and he's like, you've got something special going on. You're different from the rest of the villagers. You're special. This is that scene where, like, Adric's like, he's like, you're coming with me. And then Adric's like, what's in it for me?
He's like, oh, you have spirit too.
And then Akon says, you'll get, like, power.
Eternal life.
And Adric's like, me.
All right.
Sounds good.
So the next time we see Adric, he's clearly been, like, hypnotized.
Yes.
Or he's just acting so poorly. It's one of the two. But he's definitely just, like, zoning out. Then the doctor and Romana are basically tricking Zargo and Camilla into... revealing information that they mention the Hydrax, and then they get like really weird, and they're like, they actually say state of the ship when they're talking about the cave, or not the cave, the castle, and they're like, ship, and they're like, oh, it's just an expression.
And then I think it's like Camilla's like, be silent, and the doctor's like, no, keep talking.
It's very interesting.
I believe at some point in this that the doctor also name drops the cereal. He says state of decay somewhere in here.
Let's see, I have it written down. Oh yeah, Romana says, no, I'd say it's a sociopathetic abscess. And he says, oh, I wish I thought of that. That's a good diagnosis. Yes, I've never seen such a state of decay.
He said the thing!
Yeah, he said it! Oh my god! Everybody take a drink!
Then Zargo and Camilla get news that Akon is coming by with something and that they need to go meet him. They, like, float away together in unison and are like, if you have any questions, there are guards outside. Many guards. Which is a veiled threat. And then the doctor and Romana just sort of, like, examine the room. They sit on the throne, the thrones, and they dangle their feet. It's really adorable. They look like children. It's great.
They've clearly made up by this point.
No, they haven't.
This is
still a scene where, like, the doctor's still just staring straight ahead.
Because all I remember is how cute they were.
I mean, they were cute, but the doctor's definitely not looking at her.
Oh my goodness.
Oh.
Speaking of cute, Romana's outfit.
Yes.
What was her outfit?
It's the, like, suit jacket thing with, she's got the white gloves.
With the knickerbocker short, or pants on, and yeah, I think you saw my story on Instagram about that. I had a very similar outfit to that when I was 11 in 1984, except it was blue corduroy, but it had the blazer jacket and the knee-length pants and, like, blue plaid socks. That was a thing I wore.
I believe you called it bad fashion. And I disagree.
Yeah, you said, no, that's good. That's good fashion choices. Very 80s. Very 80s.
I like the 80s, so.
I even had a little corduroy hat, like a little cabbie hat that I would wear with it. I think I was going for some sort of Victorian, like, I don't know what I was looking at. But I was 11 or 12, you know. Who knows?
So, while they're sitting on the throne, the doctor... says, well, ask Romana, what were the names of the people on that ship, on the Hydrax, on the ship log? And then, like, Romana just rolls them off, like she's committed this to memory. And then he's like, well, what do you know about
continental shift?
Yeah. Continental.
Consonantal.
Say consonant.
Constant?
No. No, just say, like, consonantal.
Consonant.
Tall.
Consonantal.
Consonantal shift.
Consonantal shift. And then Romana's like, oh yeah, like B's into V's or V's into B's or I don't remember which way that goes. And he's like, yeah. And then she says the names and then she realizes that Akon is like O'Connor. Zargo is something.
Miles Sharkey. And then Camilla was Lauren McMillan.
I love this concept so much.
Fun fact. I did that by accident one time.
What do you mean? You did what by accident?
I created a vampire character named Bob. And then later we decided that he was Dracula's brother. We were basing Dracula also on Vlad Tepes. And Vlad Tepes had a younger brother, named Radu. Also, we had said that he used to go by Robert the Invincible. Bob did. But Radu was Radu the Handsome. So we figured Radu the Handsome throughout time became Robert the Invincible. Because Radu to Robert, it's not that big of a shift.
Yeah.
And that's how language works, you know, with linguistics and everything. So
it was so weird. Like, we did it completely by accident. Like, that was not what our intention was. We just named this character Robert the Invincible and then found out that Radu the Handsome was a real person. And it fit perfectly. It was
like psychically through time, it came to your brain, and there you go.
It was a
consonant. Now you're making me not be able to say it. Consonantal shift.
It was a consonantal shift. I don't know why I had trouble saying shift.
I think because you wanted to say drift.
Yeah, like continental drift. It was a law of continental drift.
And then they figure out that these are either descendants or the same people, and that they realize that the throne room is the Hydrax, and they just need to find a hatch. He gets up and he's like, hatch, looking for a hatch. And then Romana's like, doctor? He's like, shh, hatch, looking for a hatch. And she's like, doctor. And then she points, and he walks over to the side of the throne, and the side of the throne opens up, and he ducks inside, and he goes, Romana, I found the hatch!
Which totally reminded me the other day I was rewatching the Brady movie from the 90s, 95, and there's all that where Marcia's always taking credit for Jan's ideas, and she's like, am I invisible? Do I not have a voice? I had that idea 2 days ago! And it's just totally like that, where Romana's just like, okay, whatever. Like, I saw it first.
She actually laughs, like, haha, I've been gaslighted. So Akon brings Zargo and Camilla Adric and says, this is going to be our new
buddy.
Vamp boy. Bat buddy. And they're like, we should just kill him. And he's like, nah, we can't do that. I want to make him a vampire because he's special. And this is the first time I think he also mentions the Great One. And we're like, who's that? Who's the Great One?
That sounds bad.
Or good. I don't know. Great.
At the Techno Cave, one of the villagers, his name is Tarek, yes, who I have called the Brash Young David, because every serial's got to have one.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who's like, let's fight! And then everybody else is like, let's not. We should, like, plan more and sit and do nothing.
Except that this Brash Young David might be right.
So he comes up with a plan to rescue the Doctor alone. Because he used to be a guard, and he can be a guard again.
Even though he has the big beard and stuff.
Also, everybody knows everybody. They'll be like, Tarek, what are you doing? You got fired, like, ages ago.
Yeah, doesn't that even happen? Like, somebody's like, oh, you were the one that like, screwed up, and yeah.
Immediately.
It wasn't a great plan. So the Doctor and Romana are climbing through the castle, and they find scout ships. There's like four of them at the peak of the castle. And then they climb down. And then in a truly terrifying scene, I thought, they're in this like big open area. And it's dark. And they're talking. And then the Doctor flips the lights on. And then you just see that the whole room is just bodies. There's just bodies in the wall. Corpses.
It's kind of Ark in Space a little bit, you know. It's like, ooh.
It legitimately, like, unnerved me when it happened. And then the Doctor opens up this grate in the floor, and he's like, there are rocket tanks, but they're not filled with fuel. It's filled with blood!
That's messed up!
And Terrence Dick said something at this point in the commentary, which I 100% agree with. He's like, oh man, that would have been a better cliffhanger.
commentary?
Yeah. Because then they keep, look, they keep moving on. This is, from this point on, that's Tom Baker and Lala Ward are fine with each other.
They've made up.
They've made up.
Oh, good. That's why the heart is beating. They're back together.
Aw. Yeah, because we hear like this, boom, boom, boom. And they jump down into this even lower area. And there's a great comedic bit where the doctor goes, ah! And she's like, what? What is it? He's like, you jumped on my toe! And they find blood tubes and all sorts of stuff. And the doctor finally says, yo, I think it's vampires. And then he gets, like, very, like, dramatic about it. And describes all of the, like, you know, things that we associate with vampires. They're creatures of the night who suck the blood of the living. Or drink the blood of the living. Also, the director and Terrence Dix were both mad at Tom Baker because he says they are resistant to they don't like certain herbs.
Which is not what garlic is? Is that what you mean?
No, it's just that's the American pronunciation of herbs. They're like, it's herbs! Pronounce the H! Like, he's just been too influenced by those Americans.
Well, you know, Tom Baker, I mean, the doctor is, like, not technically from England, so it makes sense.
There you go. Yeah. And then they see the ground going, breathing, basically. It's going,
it's a pretty good effect.
And they're like, where are we? And then someone says, the resting place. And they turn around and Akon is just there. And he's like, I'm Akon and you're in my domain. Close up on his eyes.
Oh, no. His eyes!
Dun, dun, dun.
Look at my makeup!
And it's another one of those where it's like the question is not really answered. It's like, where are we? The resting place. Where? The resting place.
What? That means nothing to me. Please explain.
What is the wasting? You know, the wasting.
The resting place will eventually make sense. I don't think the wasting ever does, though.
No, no. I think that was just something made up by, maybe Akon just made it up for fun.
To sort of, like, keep them in line and stuff?
Yeah, just be like, I'm going to save you from the wasting. And they're like, ooh, that sounds scary. We'll tell our kids that.
So that's the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called The Record of Rassilon.
DJ Rassilon, right?
DJ Rassilon, yes. He hit number 1 on the charts. All of them. Just all the charts.
All the charts.
Akon's like, can you feel the power and the air? And the doctor, like... No, I don't feel anything. Basically, and then Akon's like, tries to recruit them. He's like, you should come work with us, like your other companion. And they're like, who? And I'm like, Adric. Who? Oh, Adric! I thought he was in the last one.
Wasn't that the last serial?
They usually don't stick around for more than 4 episodes. It's weird. Basically, they realize that these blood tubes are feeding something. The Great One. Him, Akon, and the Doctor sort of get into a mind battle. Romana gets away. And she breaks off a piece of the cave and chucks it at Akon.
I love that.
And the Doctor's like, you can't beat Time Lords. And Akon's like, Time Lords, the ancient enemies! The Doctor and Romana run away but are immediately caught by Zargo and Camilla. They got away like 3 times there, but kept getting caught, like, immediately. And then, like, Akon has a talk with the Great One, because apparently he's the only one who can connect with him. I guess he's the only one with, like, mental powers. And he's like, man, the Great One, he wants that Time Lord blood, so we gotta sacrifice them. We can't just kill him. Zargo and Camilla sort of go away and have a bit of a chat about what's all happened, which I don't super remember. All I remember is they were simultaneously washing their hands. In perfect unison.
And I can't remember if it's when the Doctor and Romana are still with Akon or if it's after they've been captured, but I love when they're just whispering their plan where they're like, should we pretend to cooperate till we get, you know, information about East Space? And I'm like, dude, he can hear you. He's like right there. It's like, oh my God.
Plus he's a vampire. He's probably got great hearing.
Right. And he's psychic. We just learned he's psychic. But I wrote, the inner sanctum really needs some cleaning.
It is pretty dirty.
I mean, I guess they have spiders on this planet, too. I mean, I guess, like, the servants and guards, like, they're not allowed to go in there, so no one ever cleans up. But I don't know. Actually, if it's been there 1,000 years, it'd probably have more cobwebs, wouldn't it?
They clean up enough just to make it navigable.
Maybe the bats come in and clean.
I imagine it'd be filled with guano.
Oh, yeah.
How come bats get a completely separate word for their poop? What's up with that?
Because, like Adric, they are special.
I mean, I think that is why. Don't they use guano and stuff?
Mascara? That's what somebody's always... That's what, like, I was always told growing up. I don't know if that's true.
But I think guano is better than other types of poop.
It's better poop.
So it gets its own fancy name. All so right. they are...
I'm going to come up with a special word for just my poops.
I can't wait to hear it.
Disgusting. Do you have anything?
I'm working on it.
Okay. So the Doctor and Romana are like put in like a cell. And there's like a nice callback to... I'm trying to remember which Third Doctor serial it was. But it was one with like him and Joe Grant. And he's talking about...
The Plops.
The Plops. Oh, God. I just realized what you meant when you said the Plops.
You thought like Third Doctor and Joe Grant, what? He was talking about the Plops.
I don't remember a serial called the Plops.
Yeah, I think that was in, was that Day of the Daleks? When they were captured together, and I think he was talking about the Hermit from Gallifrey at that point.
But yeah, he talks about the flower and all that, and then he talks, in this one, they're in a cell again and talking about the Hermit and his, he would tell him stories about, he said ghost stories about vampires.
I like that he says, do you want to hear a ghost story? And Romana's like, no.
And he basically gives like the Time Lord legend of there was a great vampire and the Time Lords fought him and then he disappeared. They don't know where he went to. Spoilers. E-Space.
Like the Hydrax. Romana even says it. Like the Hydrax into E-Space.
Well, I think he says something about the Record of Rassilon, or she says something about the Record of Rassilon, and that it's like in the TARDIS, specifically his...
type of TARDIS, yeah.
There's probably like some record of what defeats the vampires. And then the Doctor calls her wonderful, and she's like, oh, am I? I suppose I am. I hadn't thought about it, so I suppose I am. Which, the Doctor said that in the very first episode, so it was like a neat, nice little callback that they both got to say the same line. But then Tarek, who has been slowly sneaking around, taking out guards, breaks in and breaks them out.
This is my favorite part, because I don't know if you saw that was a blooper, because he actually hits Tom in the face, like when he opens the door. So like Tom misses his cue, so he comes in and he's like, where's the Doctor? And Tom's like kind of trying to get up behind the door. I'm here. But yeah, he like swung the door open really hard and like hit Tom Baker in the face.
Oh no.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. I didn't notice that. I need to rewatch that scene.
Yeah. it's terrible but funny. The poor guy was like, oh shit, I'm sorry.
Then the Doctor heads to the TARDIS to look for the Record of Rassilon, while Romana decides she's got to go save Adric for some reason.
Yeah.
So Tarek and Romana do the old prisoner trick, which I thought was great. Like, they just bypass the whole, like, thing where they would be like, okay, so I'm going to pretend to be your prisoner, and you pretend to be the guard, and, like, you're taking me prisoner, and you're taking me to... They just go, let's do the prisoner trick. And they're both like, oh yeah, that's a great idea.
Right.
They both know what it is.
Right.
They proceed to like fuck it up, but he's like trying to put in the code or whatever. He's using a key card. Yeah, it's like a key card like you have for hotels now.
And he puts it in upside down and she's like, no, not like that.
She's like this. And the other guy's like, well, that's suspicious that you're helping out. And then she's like, oh, I work for royalty. I'm their blood separator?
Yeah, blood group separator. I was like, okay.
And he's like, what? And then Tarek just punches him. Knocks him out. Boring conversation anyway. And then they sneak inside and they hope that Zargo and Camilla are asleep, which they are. And they find Adric, who is also asleep. And then back at the TARDIS, the Doctor has been talking with K-9, trying to find the record. K-9 can't find the record. And he has to, like, resort to, like, old punch cards?
Very futuristic. Well, I mean, I guess Rassilon was from a very long time ago. So maybe punch cards were what the Time Lords were using at that point.
Seems legit. So he prints off the record, reads the whole thing, which is very flowery, very dramatic. Tom Baker is giving it his all here. It's pretty great. And basically it just says that there were, is it bow ships?
Bow ships, yeah.
Was how they defeated them.
Because nothing they were doing was able to kill them. And so they made the bow ships that would launch these metal spikes at them to basically like stabbing them in the heart with a, you know, stake sort of thing.
So he now has the information he needs to kill these things.
except for not having a bolt of steel.
he's got the knowledge, but not the material.
And knowledge is a weapon, as Camilla said earlier.
That's true. So Romana tries to wake Adric,
which I love. She's like, "Wake up! I'm trying to rescue you."
And while she's doing that, Zargo and Camilla wake up, and Taric comes in, and they proceed to kill Taric. And Camilla's very upset about this. She's like, "Dead people, like, their blood is flat and tasteless.
I must feed on the living."
Like, he just died, though. How quickly do dead people's blood go flat?
Faster than soda, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Might still have some fizz left. I mean, give it a try.
Some of that good blood fizz.
Blood fizz.
Like, when the doctor opened the tank and there was blood in it, there was some fizz on top of that.
Yeah, it had a head on it.
Yeah, you know what? That tank is all, like, people that they killed and then, like, put the blood in the tank. That's all dead people blood. Yeah. Without the fizz.
Maybe the Great One likes stale and flat blood.
Some people do.
Who? Yeah. Name one.
The Great One.
I want to know who's out there drinking flat soda so I can
fight
them.
Oh, not flat soda, flat blood.
Oh, okay.
I don't know about you, but every blood I've ever drank has been from a dead person.
I know some people drink flat soda when they have a stomach ache, so maybe the Great One just has a big stomach ache.
Oh, okay. See, now that actually makes sense to me.
Oh, man. There was a documentary on the DVD that was talking about blood and food, like blood pudding and stuff like that. And there was one guy that was like, "One day I would like to have a blood pudding made from my own blood just to see if I'd eat it, what it tastes like."
Oh, my God.
What the hell?
This was on the DVD for this episode?
Yes.
In what context?
I don't remember that one. It must not be on my DVD.
It was just about blood and food.
Have you ever had blood pudding?
I have.
Would you? What is it like?
You know, I had a full English breakfast when I had a layover in London once, and it just tasted like sausage to me. I mean, they fry it up like a sausage. It looks like a sausage, like, puck. I don't know. It didn't taste weird to me. I wasn't sure what it was going to taste like, but I don't remember it. It was salty, but I guess blood, you know. But yeah, it tasted fine to me.
Was it your own blood, though?
It was not, unfortunately. I didn't have time to give blood on that layover, but...
Would you eat one out of your own blood?
You know, I don't know. I mean, if I was really hungry, maybe, but then I would be anemic if I was eating my own blood. And I've been anemic, and it's not fun. And that would be awkward. Yeah, that would be awkward to go to the doctor. Like, "Why are you anemic?" "Oh, I've been eating my own blood. I've been making some blood pudding, you know, for breakfast. And, you know, it works."
I don't even really know what blood pudding is.
I mean, I don't even know where it comes from when the Brits make it. I mean, I guess it's from maybe ox or pigs or, I don't know.
The lower class.
Jesus.
Yes. Peasants.
Jesus.
You know those Brits? Americans. That's what they cook. They cook up Americans.
The lower class. You know, Americans.
They don't want that flat blood, so they go for Romana and Adric. And that's the cliffhanger. It's the end of episode 3. We're now into episode 4, which I have called High Stakes.
Yikes.
Wow. Well, that is accurate.
On more than one
yeah,
level.
Yeah.
The stakes are high.
Yeah.
Vampires.
No, yeah.
And also it flies into the air.
We were all right there with you.
All right. So Akon interrupts and says, "Hey, I told you guys not to eat these people. Adric's going to be one of us and Romana's going to be sacrificed to the Great One. Guys, how many times I got to tell you this?
I put them in the refrigerator with my name on the label."
But you know, people always still eat that stuff. I mean, you will find stuff, like, I've seen, like, people write, like, "thank you" on it and put it back. I mean, that hasn't happened to me, but I've heard that happen to old coworkers.
That's awful.
Yeah.
I might start doing that at work. There's so much food in our refrigerator at work.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, it's probably like
Everything in there is older than you.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that's true. It might be expired.
Stuff's going to start growing in there. We should really clean it out.
That's the thing, is like, people will get on Slack and be like, "Someone should really clean out the fridge." And everyone goes, "Yeah, they should."
Not it.
And then it stays that way forever.
You need your own cleaning bats. Actually, now that the Great One's gone, they need a job. Maybe you could have them come to your work and clean up the fridge.
Yeah.
Good idea. This is a very resourceful podcast.
Problem solving at its best.
So the Doctor decides he needs to recruit the villagers, the ones from the Techno Cave. He's trying to figure out how to make an entrance, and he decides he's going to basically arrive there in the TARDIS. And apparently, because they're in E-Space, short hops are made easier.
Yeah, because it's small, apparently, the smallness of E-Space.
Yeah, that math. Because this is the second episode in a row where he says short hops are hard to do, but like they do them very easily in these two serials. So
yeah, and you're in the middle of a trilogy, the E-Space trilogy, so I can't remember if that's mentioned in the next one, but might be just a thing for E-Space.
They have to mention it in the next one because that's the rule of three.
The three who rule. The three Doctor Who rule.
So he does. He TARDISes into the little techno cave and everyone's like, whoa! And then we cut back to just some filler that's really great. Akon is basically, he keeps saying, it's time for the Great One to rise, and then it takes forever for it to actually happen.
Well, I mean, I'm like that in the morning, too. I mean, I get it.
But he is eating up some scenery talking about this. And, like, he's in the center of the frame, just going on and on about, it's time for the Great One to rise, and it's going to be so cool, you guys, you don't even know. Zargo and Camilla are over his shoulders. Like, it's perfect. It's like Wes Anderson framing. And they're just, pardon the expression, they're just vamping, for all they're worth, behind Akon. Like, going...
Yeah.
So over the top, and I love it.
So dramatic. Which is, like, all vampires are, really.
I thought we were back in the Graham Williams era for a moment. I thought we were back in Nymon. With the amount of cheese that is just happening in this scene.
Ham and cheese.
Yum.
This is a very food-heavy episode.
It is. It's going to make me hungry. But not for my own blood pudding. Not yet.
Not yet. One day.
One day.
We'll get there.
We'll get, yeah.
So the Doctor does a big rousing speech.
Is your own blood keto friendly?
You know, I don't know what the carbs are in blood, but they're probably pretty low. It's probably something for the carnivore diet, so it's probably fine. I'd be like, oh, put this in the carb manager or my fitness pal. Let's see how many carbs are in human blood.
Some vampire's like, I cannot drink blood. It's not part of my diet.
Too high in carbs.
Whatever shall I do? There is no vegan blood.
I don't know the Weight Watchers points.
Just eating artichoke hearts.
I like artichoke hearts.
Artichoke hearts are good.
I was just thinking of hearts and blood.
They're not good for you the way that I eat them, which is covered in butter.
Everything's good covered in butter.
You could eat just paper covered in butter, and you'd be like, good paper.
Paper.
But the Doctor does a rousing speech to get everyone to get ready to revolt. But he doesn't fully convince Kalmar, because he's old and the opposite of the brash young David.
I mean, it would take him a while to, like, he might have to redo his hair. And, you know, it's just too much work.
Well, they've recently turned on the scanner. They've got the scanner to work. And the Doctor's like, well, let me show you something. And he turns it on, he fiddles with it, and he shows him the Great One, who's underneath that ground area in the resting place. And he's just a big old bat boy. It looks pretty neat. And this is the only shot we see of him.
Yeah, I mean, we see his hand, yeah, but that's it. And then you start hearing the heartbeat, so that's kind of odd. It's like, maybe it's like, ooh, you see me, I'm gonna, you know, make myself known. He wasn't ready for a picture. Oh, I'm naked.
But that basically convinces Kalmar to be like, all right, fine, I guess we do need to do something. And then they're like, cool, what though? Let's have a whole scene where we try to figure out a plan. So they try to figure out how to kill him, and he's like, we need like a big metal bolt or whatever, or something like that. And then they just keep talking, and then the Doctor is eventually like, you know what? I've got like this great laser thing that could work. And he's like, it's a killing machine. And everybody's like, cool, what is it? And he's like, K-9! And K-9 rolls out, and everyone's like,
what?
Oh. It's a small metal dog.
That's rude.
It made me sad. I mean, I'm a big K-9 fangirl, and I was like, rude.
K-9 is just a good boy.
And he saved them. He saved them in that castle or ship or castle ship. Tower castle ship.
A rook.
Continental shift.
There's even a point where, like, Ivo, like, openly mocks K-9. Tony's just shaking her head. That's good radio, Tony.
It's not right.
But they fight their way into the castle. K-9 shoots a bunch of people. They make a plan that, like, the doctor's going to do a thing. And when he gives the signal, K-9 will tell everybody to get out of the castle.
And, of course, they're like, oh, we're not going to take, you know, our orders from him. They're like, oh, well, you better.
Oh, I skipped an important scene.
What's that?
The scene that where Adric and Romana are having a chat. And Adric is basically like, you know what? I think I might become a vampire. I'll give it a shot.
And that one when Adric or Romana's like, hey, we tried to rescue you. And he's like, well, you kind of failed, didn't you? And I was like, oh, damn. You know? He's very rude.
He's being real rude.
This scene, I was definitely like, oh, this is why people don't like him.
Yeah, Adric's basically like teams up with the vampires. And then there's a bit where they go to do the sacrifice. And Adric, like, leans over to Romana. He's like, don't worry, I've got a plan. But she's, like, 100% hypnotized, so doesn't hear it.
I like that they put her in, like a dress and everything, too. It's a very Hammer horror. It's like, we're going to dress you up to kill you.
All the time in, like, TV shows and movies and stuff, that, like, somebody gets kidnapped and they're going to be sacrificed. They always have, like, a beautiful dress that's completely tailored to them. And I would love to get kidnapped to be sacrificed if it means I get a tailored dress out of it.
Yeah, and you might potentially escape and keep that dress.
And keep the dress. Yeah, I might not, but, like, that's a risk I'm willing to take.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it ever happens where they're like, oh, damn, you know, this was actually, like, a size 14, and, you know, you're, like, an 8, and we don't have time. We don't have time to tailor it, you know?
I can't believe you just put out on this podcast asking for people to kidnap you.
Again, and I cannot stress this enough, only if a tailored dress is part of it. It does not have to be a dress. It does have to be tailored specifically to me.
What if it's ugly colors, though?
Oh, that's rough.
What if it's just, like, I don't know, Simpsons yellow?
It never is, though.
It has to be, like, a beautiful tailored dress.
I guess.
You can't sacrifice somebody in a Simpsons yellow dress.
It's just plaid.
That's what I'm saying. You can't sacrifice someone in plaid. It doesn't work.
But if it's a horror film, it's got to have a heaving bosom, though. You have to, like, it has that low, you know, kind of cut.
What if it was camo?
Camo dress? We could escape easier with that.
That's true.
It's true. You just hide in the forest that these all take place in. Well, that actually helps you escape, so would you take the camo dress?
I don't know.
You could dye it later.
That's true. You know what? I could dye it later. So maybe.
So back to this sacrifice. Adric tries to stab Akon, but much like everything else he's tried to do, he is not good at it. He is immediately stopped. The doctor gets into he's crawling through into one of the scout ships, and he's trying to start the ships, and he's having difficulty with it. The sacrifice starts, finally, after much talking about it. They put her on the slab, and stuff sort of is, like, intercutting very fast here. And then the doctor can't get the ship to turn on, so you know what he does? He Fonzie's it.
He hits it.
Smack.
He Fonzie's it.
And it turns on, and K-9 gives the signal for everyone to leave the castle. That's the shot where he's sitting on the throne.
Oh, you also have, like, Ivo kills Habris. He's like, this is for my son!
Get some revenge. It's always good.
Yeah, very family friendly.
I don't know why he needed revenge, though. He's already got Adric.
That's a good point.
That's all he needs, just a replacement.
Already replaced his son.
And then a bat flies in and bites Romana on the neck.
It's so cute. It's just like, oh, just a little bite.
And now Romana is a vampire.
Oh, no.
I don't think that happens.
No, unfortunately. She'd have to drink the bat's blood or something.
Yeah, it's a whole exchange thing. But then everything starts shaking. Everyone runs out. The scout ship pops up off of the castle and shoots up into the sky. And then the Great One rises, which is just a hand. hand popping through the ground.
Yeah, he's probably trying to turn the alarm off, you know, hit the snooze button, but he can't reach it.
Both the director and Terrence Dix were like, this is a terrible effect. And, like, the director was like, yeah, if I'd known it was going to look so bad, I would have just gotten a crane and then, like, pulled it way up and had the vampires looking up at it and not showed it. And you'd just be like, oh, it's something huge, but we don't see it. But instead, it's just a hand sticking out of the ground, like, hey, waving.
Hi!
And then they're like, what do we do? And the doctor's like, what goes up must come down perfectly into the heart.
Really great aim.
So, yeah, the ship falls back down and stakes the Great One perfectly somehow. And then the vampires are like, oh no, you killed our big bat boy.
Not our big bat buddy.
And they start coming for the doctor. And then they all get old. They all start getting old and wrinkly and...
They don't just get old and wrinkly, they turn to dust.
They melt.
It's gross.
I actually really loved that bit. I thought that was a great bit of special effects there.
Absolutely. But very gross.
Well, yeah, definitely gross. I mean, even when the rebels, makes me sound like Star Wars, but they come over and they're like, ooh.
And I think they say what happened to them. The doctor says, well, they fell to pieces. I'm surprised they put that on, because considering, like, they've been gotten onto for, like, being, you know, horror. And that's, like, one of the scariest, grossest things I've seen on the show. It's very disturbing.
Yeah, it's a bit, little bit like that Indiana Jones thing with the guy and the skull and the, yeah.
And then Romana and Adric snipe at each other a little bit. Adric's like, I had a plan. And she's like, did it work?
I was trying to rescue you, but you didn't, did you?
And then Ivo apologizes to Canine.
Yeah, that was very sweet.
Because Canine's a very good boy.
Terrence Dix and the director said, I don't like this scene. I didn't write it.
Aww.
I don't know why everyone's so mean to Canine.
Yeah, I loved him. He's like, your thanks are recorded.
And then Ivo just like does this like real big goofy smile. Like, oh, nice dog.
It was cute.
I liked it.
I liked it too.
Terrence Dix and... The Peter Moffat are wrong.
They are wrong. They are totally wrong.
And then the doctor and Romana leave and say they're going to return Adric to his home.
Oh, they also left the people with the knowledge on the computers, too.
Because knowledge is power. And that's the end. That's the end of State of Decay.
Woo!
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Armed with a queer woman's perspective, the Terminus Doctor Who podcast brings you passionate geekery for the world of Doctor Who, covering both the new and classic series. Come check out the Terminus Doctor Who podcast at terminus.libsyn.com, or come look for us on iTunes or your other favorite podcatchers as part of the ESO network. The Terminus Doctor Who podcast. Queer, opinionated, Whovian, female.
And, oh god, I can't believe you're like prepared. Ha! I blocked it. You can't do the bit. And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
Hey.
You can't see because I put Nicole's window there. You can't see the clock. How
do you move the window?
You can't. Ha ha ha.
There's no windows like in the tower.
Let me do it before you break my computer. There.
Did you ask me a question?
Yeah, Tony, what time is it?
It's 8:49 okay. p.m.
Uh-huh. What time is it in the podcast?
I believe it's the end. We just did the break.
Uh-huh. And then we do this ridiculous bit you do every episode.
Yeah. I think it's some people's favorite part.
Is it?
They're like listening to the rest of the podcast and they're like, oh man, I can't wait until Tony doesn't tell Joe what time it is. It really makes the podcast.
Yeah, everybody wants you to do the same gag every episode.
It just gets funnier.
Yeah, I mean, everybody on iTunes is like saying that's the best part.
All the reviews say it.
It's like chili. Like the longer you leave it in the refrigerator, the better it's going to get.
Is that a thing about chili?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but then it eventually gets fuzzy. So you kind of, there's a window there.
That is true. Maybe I need a better metaphor.
No, I think you're getting fuzzy.
Wine? Does wine get better with age? Some kind of alcohol, for sure.
Some do. Sometimes it becomes like wine vinegar. So it's tricky.
Oh, jeez, this is not...
This is hard.
This is not going well.
So why don't you just tell me what time it is?
It's time for Final Thoughts.
Final Thoughts!
Basically, this is definitely one of my favorite stories. I love how it combines sort of, I was going to say classic horror, but more like sort of the campy horror of like a Hammer horror story, as well as it has the sci-fi elements. And I think it just does that really well. And a lot of the dialogue is really good. I kept making notes of things that people were saying, and I realized that most of my notes were quotes. And so, oh, that rhymed. But I was like, hey, this is actually a really well-written story. And yeah, it's got some cheesy parts, and there's some plot holes like the wasting. But overall, I think it's a really strong story and perfect for Halloween.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree about the dialogue. There were so many points when watching this serial where, like, there would be an exchange and I would look at Joe and I'd be like, this is a good one. Just little character moments or the just over-the-top dramatics of the vampires. And I think what's really great about them, too, is that, like, they're just from Earth. They're from, like, modern-ish Earth. And they're just, like, so over-the-top dramatic that they're, like, dressing in this medieval finery and stuff. It's all part of them just being goth and dramatic, which is very fun.
Yeah, maybe they were goths when they were back on Earth. And this is just them realizing their dream.
I think so. Yeah, this one was just, like, really fun in a way that... Doctor Who maybe hasn't been for me in a while. I like this sort of flashback to the
Hinchcliffe.
Yes, thank you. My brain kept giving me Heathcliff, and I was like, that is not right. Please, no.
That would be interesting.
I preferred the Garfield era, but that's just me.
I'm actually more of a fan of the Felix era myself.
Same.
I appreciated the callback to it. It was nice for it to be scary again, especially in time for Halloween. It felt festive. I enjoyed this one. It was very fun. It was a really good serial for Romana. I don't know if we talked about it a lot, but she had a lot to do in it and was very funny and had a lot of good lines. So did K-9. And it's always a good serial, I think, when I care about the secondary characters. And I absolutely just love the three who rule. They are very fun.
They certainly rule.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I third that. almost said second, but there's three of you guys.
Three who rule.
We are the three who rule. Go us.
Yay. Should we change our name with the continental shift?
How many Nymon have you seen today?
Three! I saw three. I think this was, yeah, a return to, like, going back to an old script, I think was a good idea, because there's been a lot of changes this season. Not all of them, I don't think, are great. I feel like the stories have been kind of dry a little bit this season.
It seems very paint by number of, like, we know what Doctor Who is, we have it thoroughly established, we do this, 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 and this, which is boring.
I think more it's just that, I know this is the season where, like, things are less funny. I don't like that as much. So I feel like some of the fun has been zapped out of this season a little bit. Megalos had a cactus and...
You can't stop Tom Baker.
You can't stop Tom Baker. You can try. And they've been doing that this season.
Though he does seem like he's burning out a bit by this point. I don't think he's phoning it in, but he is kind of not firing on all cylinders most of the time.
And I think some of that is up to the fact that he was sick for some of these serials. Plus, he definitely was not enjoying it as much. I think they were definitely trying to make it less the Tom Baker show and more Doctor Who. And he was not happy about that. And I think it does, like, leak that sort of negativity sort of leaks into the show a little bit. But, like, this serial feels like...
It feels fun again.
It feels fun again, yeah. Being sort of like this sort of... fun take on a genre, on vampire stories. Because, like, the previous ones have just been, like, just a science fiction thing. Science fiction thing. And this, it feels like, yeah, like a return to, like, we're doing Frankenstein, or we're doing mummies, or we're doing whatever. This feels like, this is Doctor Who does whatever.
Yeah, because it doesn't have just, like, the fact that there's a vampire. It has the tone, too, which that works really well for it, I think.
And some killer music. I've been digging the music. That's one thing I've been digging this season. I like the music. I think it's been a step up. Though, yeah, I do think this was good for Romana, and the Doctor was good, and the side characters were good. Adric didn't get a whole lot to do.
And what he did do was annoying.
A little iffy on him. But all in all, I like this. This is the first Terrence Dix episode we've seen since he passed away. So it's good to... This is a good, like... one to watch, you know, like, because it's a good example of how he is a great writer. I heard someone say, like, he may not reach the heights of some of the Doctor Who writers, but like even his worst writing is like still good. Like some writers who like write great stuff will also write really bad stuff, and his is always at least solid.
Yeah, he was always consistent with what he did. And I actually related to the story. I learned when I was looking into details about this that there's actually an audio version of this that's a little bit different. It's told from Tom Baker's narrating it, and it's more from the Doctor and Romana's point of view. And you can find the download online. Yeah, I meant to listen to it this week, but I didn't get around to it. But I was like, oh, that's cool. There's like another version of it.
Neat. To check that out. Before we go, is there anything you would like to plug?
Like plug in? Like a generator? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Well, I could plug my podcast. That would be the Terminus Doctor Who podcast. It's at terminus.libsyn.com. I'm working on my Canine and Company episode right now, so that should be out hopefully very soon. What you guys need to do, I don't think you guys have done that.
Yeah, I think we're going to do it between 4 and 5.
Okay. If you do it and you need someone on there, I am a super fan of that story. Not to overblow it. I mean, it's campy as hell, but I love it.
I think it might be one of those ones where we're like, whoever wants to be on it can be on it, sort of deal.
Woo, party!
Canine and Company. Our company.
Please watch Unseen World. Follow See Unseen World on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We've been going to a lot of cool places that I won't have edited anytime soon, not until next year, but I've posted pictures of some of them on Instagram, so you can get kind of an idea of the locations that are going to be featured in season 2. Please, like, follow us on Facebook, and if you want to, like, leave a message on our Facebook, if you've, like, seen the show and have feelings about it and you want to share those feelings on the Facebook, anything that helps my bosses know that people actually watch the show, that would be helpful.
I want to do two quick plugs. One, our Kickstarter has recently ended. I'm saying this from the perspective of the future. It's still going on now, here in the past. But when this episode is released, the Kickstarter will be over. We were funded in 2 days. Thank you so much for everyone who's donated. It's for a book called Road Trippy. I think we're going to be releasing it as an ebook. Right now we're trying to hit stretch goals. I don't know if we've hit them or not. Maybe we did. But if we did, there's going to be an audiobook and other cool stuff. So thanks again for pledging to Road Trippy. Secondly, because I feel like I have to mention this because it's relevant to this episode, keep an eye out for a TV show that I'm working on called House of the Son of the Dragon. It's going to be a show with movies hosted by Dracula, played by me, written by me. I didn't write the movies. I wrote the bits around the movies. It's a rap show.
Cool.
So keep an eye out for that. I'm not sure what station it'll be on. It's probably going to be on Retro or Action or something like that. I will give you more details when I know. But I figured, hey, this is about vampires. I should talk about my vampire show.
Well, now I know we were making the move to having all of our stuff available over streaming.
Yeah.
And we will have more details about that when they are given to us.
Yes. So you'll be able to see The Unseen World and House of the Son of the Dragon and other shows that we work on, like More Than the Music.
More Than the Music, which we both have editing and shooting credits on.
Which is it's a country music interview show. Our coworker Stacy Newman interviews country music people.
And we've got new shows in development there too. Stuff that I don't know if we can talk about because they like just shot the pilot, so I don't know.
It's just shooting pilots, airline pilots. It's like they get put in bulletproof vests and we just shoot them.
Oh,
and see what, how they react.
No, it's not.
I thought maybe you were using the scout ship to kind of come down and like pierce them.
Season finale. Season finale. But yeah, I think that's all we got to plug.
Yeah.
If you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. Tell Tony how much you love her dumb bit that she does.
Please.
If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to watchyourassalon.com/support. And there you can find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, a link to our Discord server, live streams where we watch the episodes with you guys, all sorts of neat, interesting things. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you on the podcast. Put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Steve Conway for sponsoring this episode.
Thanks, Steve.
You can check him out on 8radio.com. I also want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our theme song.
Hey, thanks, Vince.
You can check out more of their music at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about the finale of the East Space Trilogy, Warrior's Gate. With returning guests Matt Golden and R. Allen Seiler.
No way.
Yeah, those two guys.
I like both of them.
And they like us. So until then, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic parasocial way.
Goodbye, everyone.
Well, it's quite a technocothica you've got here.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.